I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sam Amick, national NBA writer extraordinaire for The Athletic. I think this just dropped, actually. A great conversation piece. Some insight into Draymond Green. They hit a bunch of topics, and Sam graciously making some time for us right now. Mr. Amick, what's up, buddy?
Mr. Ryder, good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little off today, Sam. I'm such a creature of habit, and it's so weird that I guess on Sunday night, you know, we're all going to start planning our summers and our work summers, and we're going to be doing NBA work, what, all the way through August, basically, right? It's hit me how late this season is right now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the rhythm and the clock is off. You mentioned the Draymond interview. I was a little bit guilty in the top of the piece and kind of, you know, pulling out my little mini violin and complaining about how different our jobs are right now and how, it was really refreshing to talk to Draymond because it's a one-on-one conversation but talking about how much I miss being in the building and being in the locker room and doing what we do. So very different. And like you said, it's going to be late into the summer and this is a whole different conversation, but you've got the Olympic question, you know, on the back end of the finals, you know, just absolutely back to back, which is going to be wild. So lots going on.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, you're based in the West Coast. You cover the whole country, but you've had a lot of time around the Warriors. You had this long conversation with Draymond. I know the road from here for Golden State to any kind of real competitive chance in the West playoffs. So that's a long and winding journey. But there's this sort of growing sense the last three or four days, a little buzz out there that maybe people are sleeping on the Warriors. Maybe the Warriors, the way they've been playing, are dangerous. What do you think their legitimate upside is in this postseason?
I think, you know, if you put them up against a Phoenix or a Utah, I think more so Phoenix, I wonder, I don't know, you know, could they shock the world? Maybe. Phoenix has shown some vulnerability lately. Now, they've also been missing some key guys. Cam Johnson's been out, things like that. But and it's something where you and I have talked about Chris Paul a lot in our different conversations over the years. And on the one hand, Hall of Famer, incredible player, but, you know, we are now getting into that time of year where the spotlight is always brighter on Chris because he has not been able to achieve as much as he would have liked in the past. So on the one hand, he's a guy that you would think would make the Suns as an elite top team kind of impervious to a team like the Warriors that just don't have as much talent or aren't as good. But, you know, I don't know. So the Warriors, I think no matter what they do in the postseason, what they're happy about already is that they got momentum again. They have the beginnings of something again, where if you add Klay to it next year, you know, that you could be back on your way. But I'm curious to see what they do.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, I've asked this of a lot of folks in the position that you and I are in, talking about writing about the NBA for a living, and I've gotten a range of answers. I'm very curious on yours. It's a Lakers and Nets question. Let's start with the Lakers. What do you think? I know there's a range of outcomes, but what is your sense of what you think the Lakers are about to do or not do over the course of the next few days, the next few weeks, the next few months?
Play this tape back if it blows up in my face, but I just, as of today, I feel like, you know, I don't know if it'll be deep in the playoffs, in the finals, whatever it might be. I'm not believing in this group to do it again. New faces, you know, new pieces, all the injuries. And I don't think it's funny because I asked Draymond who he would pick to win the whole thing. And he basically picked Brooklyn and talked about how even though the three stars have only been together for seven games, that, you know, if anybody could kind of get over that, it would be those three guys. Well, it's the Lakers have two guys, and they have, you know, one guy in AD who's been up and down this year, really, really good lately. And LeBron, I don't know physically what we're going to be looking at there. So many question marks. You know, I'm not seeing them right now as the defending champs. And Brooklyn, I'm a little bit with Draymond. Could a Utah or Milwaukee or a Phoenix, you know, kind of win this whole thing? Of course. But Brooklyn's ability to be dominant, even when they had only two stars, is a pretty good sign of how incredible they can be. And so I think, you know, they could be the ones at the end of this thing.
Sam Amick here on the show. Yeah, and I find myself skeptical of both. But I was texting a Lakers person yesterday who that was so overly confident that it's going to be, I think they went Nets in six over the Lakers in the finals. Was there, right? Very, it just feels like such an unlikelihood both those teams make it because it's been such a weird year. And I'm wondering, Sam, to what degree you think injuries and maybe even injuries that haven't occurred yet could play a role going forward the way they have certainly through this fairly injury-plagued regular season as it relates to star players.
Yeah, I mean, that part's been disappointing. I'm never one for the asterisk conversation in terms of different teams and players' achievements, but we also got to acknowledge the elephant in the room. Like this year, the standings, you know, are a direct result, at least partly, of all these injuries to star players. It's been all year long. You know, Joel Embiid kind of fell down a bit in the MVP conversation because of his injuries. Damian Lillard missed some time, but I mean, the teams at the end of the day that we know have the most talent have not been whole. And so LeBron is number one, and he's the guy that, I mean, you know as well as anybody, you covered him every day for a couple of years, that his toughness and his ability to play through injury is pretty legendary. So the idea that he sat on the shelf for 26 games or whatever it was tells you everything you need to know. And coincidentally that he's going to be ready in time for the playoffs, you know, like, well, he's obviously pushing himself. He pushed himself last week when he tried to come back and it didn't go very well. So he's number one. From there, I think about Harden's hamstring. You know, he's looked good coming back, but that's a tough injury and the kind of thing that could, you know, pop up again. Ask Chris Paul about that. I mean, he's had playoff runs short-circuited by a hammy. So, yeah, left and right, the best players in the game are kind of hobbling. I think, you know, you could still have a perfect storm, though, from a rating standpoint where, you know, now you have the Lakers coming up on the back end, you know, knocking off a number one or number two seed and having a lot of fun in the playoffs. So that part of it is going to be different. It could be fun.
Sam Amick here on the program. I'm Bill Ryder, Ryder Than You, CBS Sports Radio. Sam, it feels like if I wanted to, and you know I've never been a contrarian in my life, but if I wanted to be negative, I think you can make a case against Philly. You can make a case against Milwaukee. You can make a case against the Nets. I mean, I could literally go through all of the contenders and feel like there are some real question marks in each of these cases. Some injury, some of the history that they have in the postseason, some their ability to score, you know, in what is a different environment in the playoffs. To what degree do you think just the possible open nature of this year could impact the way fans view the sport, given it doesn't feel like there's going to be a coronation until there's an actual coronation. It feels different to me, Sam. I don't know if it does to you, that there's all these outcomes that are possible.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's a threshold there for where it's good for interest. And I forget where I read this recently, but somebody made a point about if you use the NCAA comparison and you know, the NBA would love to have a little bit of that March Madness kind of feel. That's partly the thinking behind the play-in tournament. But what this piece that I read had highlighted was the fact that it appears there's a threshold there. Like, people don't want, you know, the two Cinderella teams in a championship game that they stop watching. You need to have a Duke in there. You got to have, you know, a UConn in there. And so with the NBA, I think it's probably somewhat similar. Like, how people view a champion, you know, who knows? If it winds up being a Phoenix, how would people feel about that? Nobody saw that coming. But first of all, Bill, your promo said that you're nice and humble, which I wanted to give you a hard time about. So I don't know what you're talking about.
I am nice. Half true.
But I'm with you. It is weird. Maybe recency bias, but you can go through the whole standings and 100%, like, just say, here's why I don't believe in this team, this team, this team. I mean, I don't truly believe in any team right now. And the one that comes to mind that also, you know, I don't totally believe in is the Clippers. Like, on paper, you look at them and you say they've had some continuity now. It's year two. You had the heartache of what happened against Denver last year. You should have grown from it. Ty Lue's done a nice job. You know, Paul George has been fantastic, and Kawhi's Kawhi, so it should be them, right? But, you know, I don't think believe in their fabric just yet. So I'm with you. It's going to be completely wide open.
Sammy McCure on the show. Sam, I know you're trying to figure out your ballot. Should Nate McMillan be considered at all for Coach of the Year? Is that crazy talk? Because I haven't been able to get my mind around it. Because how good Atlanta has been since he's taken over.
I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. It almost, this is a weird analogy, but it almost kind of reminds me of, like, Julius Randle's been so good this year, and people have been occasionally tempted to throw him into the MVP conversation. And I think I saw the jump the other day on ESPN, and our friend Rachel Nichols had pushed back on that and was like, well, can't we just give Julius some credit and, you know, maybe give him the most improved player award and not, you know, not everybody has to be in the MVP discussion. I feel that way a little bit about Nate because he's been great. But if we had a real absence of incredible season-long coaching performances elsewhere, then maybe Nate, for me, would be the guy. But, you know, the Monty Williams candidacy, I think, is incredibly strong. Tom Thibodeau's candidacy is incredibly strong. And I think Quinn Snyder's in there as well. Mike Malone. Nate McMillan is in that class. Obviously, he's got kind of a different profile than all the rest because they have been incredible, and it's been something else to see. And I think as good as they've been, if he had gotten them to the top of the East, you know, and I know they're not that far off, but they're a second-tier Eastern Conference right. team. Then, you know, if they were up there with the Brooklyns and the Phillies, then yeah, I think it probably would be Nate. But to me, it doesn't quite meet that mark.
He is Sam Amick. I'm the remarkably humble Bill Ryder here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm going to use your insight and your intellect and your experience, Sam, because I think the NBA made a mistake. I think they meant to send it to Ben Ryder. Like, maybe we'll just let some baseball writers vote this year. But I have a vote again. The vote has come back to me. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, love the NBA in return. And I'm not done yet, but watching that game last night, I've been thinking this. I think I'm going to put Chris Paul on my ballot. I know the numbers don't hold up, but just his presence. Do you want to talk me out of that? Are you on that boat? I know it's further down on the ballot, but feeling like the MVP's done. How are you eyeing 2 through 5?
I'm again, recency bias. Part of calling Draymond Green, and I've done this a couple times to be honest, is like he likes having this media role, this analyst role that he plays, and so it was almost like, hey, let's talk about my ballot, and I know how subjective you are.
Oh, yeah.
But go ahead and talk to me about Steph and talk to me about yourself for Defensive Player of the Year. But even independent of that, Steph, I mean, I got Jokic number one for sure. I might put Steph number two. I've got Giannis there. I have Embiid there. And to me, the Chris Paul question comes down to Chris and Luka. And Luka started slow. The Mavs have been very hot lately. Luka's been tremendous. You know, if you break it down from a number standpoint, there's no contest. It's Luka. But Chris's intangibles and the leadership and the tenacity and both ends of the floor. This is a very good defensive team in Phoenix, and he has a ton to do with that. He's the head of the snake, so to speak. So I don't have any problem with Chris being on people's ballots. You know, it's the numbers are tricky because Devin Booker's got a higher usage rate, you know, by a long shot over Chris on that team. And, you know, statistically what he's doing is not exceptional. It's exceptional for his age. But, you know, we've seen what's happened with that team. They're completely different because of his arrival.
Talking to Sam Amick here on the show, whether it's, you know, third team All-NBA or it's Coach of the Year, is there a part of the awards ballot for you that has been particularly daunting and particularly difficult as you try to work through it?
I mean, admittedly, I've been, you know, you know, that when it's like the weekend and you got chores to do and you just keep putting them off, the All-NBA stuff has been that thing for me. Like mentally, I keep diving into every other award, knowing that third team All-NBA is going to be really hard, and specifically at the guard spot. You know, like Bradley Beal is become this guy who is just perpetually, on the brink of making it, not making it, which is crazy to say about a guy that's almost going to be the league leader in scoring. It's going to be second this year, I think. But, you know, the guard spot is hard. Trae Young comes to mind, where what Trae's done has been incredible, but I could absolutely see a lot of people, and I don't even know ultimately for me if like where Trae's going to be, but I could see Trae not being on people's ballots. So I think that's tough. In terms of the individual awards, I have a lot of clarity about the winners. I think, like you alluded to with MVP, it's more so, okay, how does the rest of the ranking look? Like Defensive Player of the Year, I got Rudy Gobert. And I'd be curious, I know we're kind of going freestyle here, but, you know, I don't know how you see that race, because after Rudy, who for me is the guy, you know, I think there's quite a few guys you could get into.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it feels like the top of the ballots feel like most improved player is pretty clear, that gentleman in New York. Yeah. And MVP, I think we know who that is. And I'm with you on Gobert. And then it gets really tough. And even for me, just personally, Sam Amick from The Athletic, Coach of the Year's not set, because it feels like Monty Williams, but what Thibodeau's done is incredible. And it's not like Quinn Snyder's been a bum. I mean, it's hard.
Well, and there's very different stories, Bill. Like, I've said this before, but with Quinn's not going to win. But my argument for him being top three would be, you have to look beyond the scope of this season. And this is, you and I connect on this level. This is the writer part of me, and the idea that I wrote about that Jazz team last March, and we had kind of a definitive story about how they were on the brink of the division. And, you know, we had used the word unsalvageable from a source to describe the relationship between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. And to their credit, you know, they showed that person wrong. They showed a lot of people wrong. And what they've done to go from being at the center of the shutdown of the NBA in the middle of a pandemic to not fracturing and then staying together, losing in the playoffs the way they did, and, you know, after being up 3-1, surviving all that stuff, Quinn Snyder's got everything to do with the personal dynamics that survived. And I think, you know, that sort of a thing is tough to quantify. But for me, he's part of the candidacy for him. So I think he's there. But even the Malone one, somebody this morning texted me about Michael. And it's like, you know, you lose Jamal Murray. You lost Will Barton for a long time. You're integrating Aaron Gordon. They've been through a lot. And that team just kept going and going and going and has been pretty defiant. And so I think Michael's done a great job, too.
I agree. And he's a tough one for that third spot. And I'm probably not going to put Doc Rivers on the ballot, but I'm not comfortable enough to actually lock that into my own mind yet.
Overlooking him, though. He's been great.
Yeah, he's been great.
And that's a group that, like, we could go all day on this, but that's a group that was, you know, they were like the kids that just were underperforming, so to speak, and you bring a new teacher in and now everybody's got, you know, A's and B's. And that's the reality of that situation. Joel Embiid's game evolved, and Doc had everything to do with that. He got his butt down in the post more than before and just, you know, got the best out of a lot of different guys, brought his son-in-law into the mix, you know, with Seth Curry and the way he's impacted them. So a ton of good coaching this year.
Sam Amick, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I'm going to lean into my humility. You're right. I don't celebrate it enough. I'm too humble to celebrate my own humility. But I'm going to work on it. As always, my friend, great work. How much are you, this last one, I know we got to let you go. How much do you think you'll be on the road this postseason as the world certainly starts to look like some version of normal might return?
I don't know, man. We can hear the huff. Like, it's driving me crazy. The lack of certainty, you know, and again, I told you, I complained a little bit in the column today. Like, we don't have any clarity whatsoever about access and there's, I'm a little skeptical that things might not change in terms of, you know, I think the fans realize this, but to this point, we continue to talk to coaches and players strictly over Zoom or like phone conversations like the one I just had. And so I don't know. I mean, if that doesn't change, then is it worth it to get on a plane and go watch a game in an arena and then sit on the laptop to talk to everybody. It's an unprecedented type of environment. I think I'll be at the NBA Finals, no matter what the access looks like. But before that, I'm really not sure.
Yeah, I'm having the exact same. I mean, I think, not that anybody cares, but I might spend my whole time in New York because CBS Sports HQ is based there. And then if I want to, drop down to a, it's just, everything is still weird. What remains true, Sam, is how good you are at your job, loving the work, appreciate the time. And I guess maybe in July, I'll see you at the NBA Finals, if not sooner.
Sounds good, my friend. And you are the most humble person I know. Don't let anybody tell you different.